This is Louisiana Considered on WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Diane Mack. Just ahead on today's show, George C. Wolfe's bold satire, The Colored Museum, explores what it means to be Black in contemporary America. NOLA Project cast member Matthew Thompson joins us. And the crew of Ferret goes beadless next Mardi Gras. We'll talk with crew captain Bobby Hortzberg. But first, there's a truck driver shortage throughout the nation, which has some Louisianans looking for creative solutions. In October, Baton Rouge Community College's Port Allen branch relaunched its course for students looking to get a commercial driver's license, or CDL. It's the kind of license required to drive 18-wheelers and other large ground transport vehicles. Heather Guidry, BRCC's Dean of Technical Studies and Adult Education, spoke with WRKF's Adam Voss.
Heather, thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So first of all, tell us what motivated BRCC to relaunch this course. It was shuttered in the past. Now there's demand for truck drivers. Tell me about that.
Sure. So you mentioned the nationwide shortage. There's also a shortage here locally. Everything that we have pretty much comes off of a truck. And Baton Rouge Community College saw this need. We offer, as a community college, programs that are high wage, high demand jobs. And we're just trying to help fill that gap and careers that students can get started in and build upon that.
What does the usual path look like to getting a commercial driver's license? What's that usual program look like? And how does BRCC's program compare to that?
Sure. So the curriculum is 2 weeks in the classroom, and that time is really focused on safety, rules and regulations of the road, really making sure that the students are ready to understand that part of the job. And then the 4 weeks out doing the driving, practicing driving, I think is the time that they really get excited because it's hands-on. They're in the truck. They're being able to put into practice the things that they've been learning in the classroom. And at the end of the program, the student is going to be able to take the licensing test to get their CDL, their commercial driver's license.
What kind of numbers are you looking at? How many are you graduating? And how does that compare to the shortage of drivers we have here?
So we need a lot more students to fill that gap. Right now, we are working to increase the number of students coming through the program. We just relaunched it this fall. So hopefully by this spring, we will be making an impact in the local economy.
Tell me, what kind of employers are looking for these drivers? There's the stereotypical 18-wheeler driver, but that's not the only kind of commercial driver. I know we have a lot of industry here.
Absolutely. So this could be anything from a bus driver. We know that there's bus driver shortages. That could be local produce companies. It could be nationwide businesses that are transporting goods and supplies, just the packages that you get delivered to your house every day.
We're speaking with Heather Guidry with Baton Rouge Community College. We're talking about the shortage of truck drivers nationwide and what the college's CDL program is looking to do to address that. Heather, I imagine driving a big commercial vehicle could be a bit of a high-stress job, especially in Baton Rouge, where the traffic isn't necessarily all roses and open wide fields.
Sure. It can be a very demanding job. And it's why it's so important that we encourage more people to go into this field so that we have enough people to fill the void so that people don't get as burnt out on the job.
What barriers have you encountered when it comes to recruiting young adults, 18, 19 years old, for the CDL program?
Well, the program does require a sense of maturity. You do have to be ready to understand and be ready to follow the rules of the road. And really just getting also young people to understand that this can be a starting point for them to build upon their career. And we're just trying to put the profession out there so that they know that it's an option, that it's something that they can do and get started working within 6 weeks of training.
And what kind of money are we talking about for the students when they graduate?
It's really up to the student and where they go to work. If they are willing to work 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, they'll probably make a little bit more money than if they're doing something where it's just local and coming home every night. But if one day you get to the point where you can own your own truck, then you can really exceed six figures building relationships with companies, and you're able to transport their goods for them.
Heather Guidry is Dean of Technical Studies and Adult Education at Baton Rouge Community College. Heather, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
From WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge, you're listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Diane. Plastic bead necklaces have become an iconic Mardi Gras throw for many crews, but there's growing criticism of them. The thousands of pounds of plastic waste they generate can clog up street drains, and many beads end up in landfills. That's led some crews to reconsider using them. The crew of Ferret announced last week they will ban plastic beads next Mardi Gras. Joining us now to talk more about the decision is Bobby Hortzberg, Captain of Ferret. Bobby, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Diane.
Why are you banning plastic beads? What's wrong with them?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of issues with them. One, you know, they've been tested before in the past and determined that, you know, they're potentially toxic to people, toxic to the environment. They also are clogging up the drains, which we so desperately need here in New Orleans with our very primitive infrastructure that we have. You know, we have a very delicate ecosystem here. And, you know, I think doing anything to contribute to further exacerbating the problems that we already have is a, you know, bad idea.
Now, I'm a New Orleans native, and I remember growing up and catching plenty of glass beads. They were special. Why did we get away from those?
Very simple, cost. They're much more expensive than plastic beads. And, you know, there's been a culture in Mardi Gras that is developed that has, you know, the expectation of just this massive volume of things that you're going to get from a parade. Whereas we want to start, you know, creating an expectation of being able to go home with things that you can use, things that you want to keep, things you're not just going to throw away. And so that's kind of the direction that we're going. And a lot of crews have already started to go in that direction. I think just, you know, just getting rid of the plastic beads completely, you know, I think one also makes a statement that we're really committed to, you know, doing this.
So how did the decision to ban beads come about in your crew? And what were the conversations like? Was there pushback?
Honestly, no, not really at all. In fact, most of the conversations were riders that have come to myself and other members of the leadership asking that we move towards more sustainable throws. We also do a survey every year, and overwhelmingly people were saying, you know, look, we want to move towards more sustainable throws. And so, you know, ultimately, yes, it was a decision that was made by, you know, myself as the captain and by our board. But it was a unanimous decision. You know, we all realized that look, it's time to stop contributing to this problem and start trying to be a solution.
There are a lot of programs that recycle plastic beads. Why not just do more of that?
Well, look, there's nothing wrong with that. And we encourage anybody that's going to, you know, the crews that are going to continue to throw plastic beads. We love the idea of the recycling. You know, that's the whole point, is to try to eliminate waste. But, you know, I think our position is that we just don't want to contribute to that culture anymore at all. Not that it's there's anything wrong with it. We just feel like it's not right for us. It's not right for what we're doing right now. It's not right for the direction that we're trying to move as a crew.
We are speaking with Bobby Hortzberg, one of the founders of the Crew of Ferret, about their recent decision to ban plastic beads during Mardi Gras in 2025. Bobby, why is this important to your crew to do, and why announce that you're banning beads now, right after Mardi Gras?
It's important for our crew to do because we love New Orleans and we love Mardi Gras. And I have a one-year-old daughter, and I'd like for Mardi Gras to still exist when she's old enough to participate in the way that I'm participating. So that's really the biggest thing, is that we feel like, you know, we're currently contributing to something that is hurting the city, And that's not what Mardi Gras is supposed to be about. Mardi Gras is supposed to support the city. It's supposed to be for the city, for the people. And so, you know, that is really, you know, a big reason of why we really wanted to do it. You know, and another thing, you know, why we chose to do it right after Mardi Gras. I think it took one more time to participate in it, to see it, to, you know, and there's a lot more people bringing attention to it right now. So it was an easier decision for us as a result of that. And just kind of, it was almost like a light bulb. It's like, look, this is something we really just have to do.
Now, I know reducing waste during Mardi Gras has been a topic of discussion for years. Why do you think we're starting to see crews take more action now?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that more people are paying attention to the, you know, environmental problems that, you know, it's causing. I think that there's more discussion about it. And I think that more, you know, crew members are speaking up and speaking out. You know, Mardi Gras has grown so much over the last 20 years. You know, there's so many more riders, you know, now than there was 10, 15 years ago, thousands more. And so when you start to build a more diverse group of individuals, you're going to have people that are going to speak out about these things that were always just something that were accepted as part of Mardi Gras. And, you know, we just got to a point where we felt like, you know, accepting something like this just wasn't suitable anymore.
Well, I want to point out something obvious. It's fun to catch beads, and it's such a big part of Mardi Gras. Some crews like Musis have designed special throws to maybe reduce some of the waste they produce. How is Ferret going to replace beads?
Well, you know, you're never going to replace beads completely, right? Part of what we are striving to do is not just replace beads, but change the culture and the idea that you have to come home from a parade with a bounty of items that ultimately are going to go in the trash can or go in a box and go in the attic, right? We want to throw things out that people are actually going to use, like luggage tags, like sunglasses, like hats, blankets, you know, handmade masks that people use, you know, as decorative items, beautiful handmade masks. And you can see a lot of those on our Instagram. But, you know, those are the types of things that we want to move towards. And we realize we're never going to replace the volume of beads. But I think our riders understand that and are ready to accept that new reality.
So does that mean that you're still going to have some beads?
No. We are. I mean, look, I'm not going to go search everybody's bags. I imagine that there will probably be, you know, 10 strands of beads that fly off a float or two here or there. But we're talking about the big picture. And the big picture is we're going to reduce, you know, the amount of beads that we're going to throw over the next 10 years by about 2 million strands.
Wow.
That's just us. That's little old crew of Ferret. 2 million strands of beads that we will eliminate from the delicate ecosystem, from the landfills, from, you know, potentially going out into the water. So, you know, we're excited about it.
Bobby Hortzberg, one of the founders of the crew of Ferret, talking about their recent decision to ban plastic beads during Mardi Gras in 2025. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
A bold, iconic satire exploring what it means to be Black in contemporary America continues its run as the NOLA Project Theater Company and the New Orleans African American Museum partner to present Tony Award-winning dramatist George C. Wolfe's The Colored Museum. The immersive production takes place in and around the museum's historic grounds in the New Orleans Treme neighborhood. NOLA Project cast member Matthew Thompson joins us now. Welcome to Louisiana Considered.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you for having me.
Matthew, this work has been described by playwright George C. Wolfe as both an exorcism and a party. It premiered nearly 40 years ago and remains relevant to this day. Can you set the stage for us? How is the Black American experience being explored in this journey?
So this play premiered on Broadway in 1986. It definitely takes a very close and sometimes uncomfortable but comedic look at African-American life and at the African-American experience all the way from slavery through contemporary times. It's 11 different vignettes or small scenes that are placed throughout the NOAM, or New Orleans African American Museum campus. So the audience will definitely be moving around, hopefully both literally and figuratively, as they go through and experience the show. We're calling them exhibitions. And each vignette sort of takes a different kind of piece or aspect of the African American experience and satirizes it, frankly.
Now, the work is set in a fictional museum. How does this real venue, the New Orleans African American Museum, add to the experience?
NOAM, being in the oldest historically African American neighborhood in the country, celebrating a city that, you know, is so full of rich African American history and the contributions of so many African Americans, setting a play of this magnitude in that space, just, I think it elevates the work. I think that it adds a layer of complexity and opportunity for thought. And also, frankly, you know, I hope that it exposes more people to NOAM. I think that it's a wonderful, wonderful space. The things that those folks are doing are phenomenal, and more people in our city should be a part of it.
Now, how does the playwright define or redefine what it means to be Black in America today?
I don't know that he defines or redefines it at all, frankly. I think that he invites the audience to question what that experience is and what that means. It's been interesting. You know, I think that there are a lot of kind of inside jokes that most African Americans get kind of immediately. And it's interesting watching different audiences of different backgrounds have different reactions to, you know, kind of different aspects of the show. You know, I don't think that you have to explain or define for African Americans what our experience is. That being said, I do think that it takes an interesting look at what that experience has been, what it has meant, both to us within the confines of greater American society, as well as to, you know, greater America in terms of the way that they interact with us within, you know, this very kind of complex society that we have.
So can you tell us, what is the satire in this work? Can you give us an example with some of the themes that are being explored?
Sure. You know, themes that are explored are certainly, you know, hair, which is a very, very big and tough topic within the African-American community. For folks that are fans of theater, you know, African-American theater and what that means and what that style has been, you know, plays and playwrights that we're very familiar with, you know, works like For Colored Girls That Have Considered Suicide, When the Rainbow Is Enough, or Raisin in the Sun, you know, August Wilson. The things that we see most often as representations of African-American culture are explored and in some ways lampooned. Our music, the way that we react to, or America has reacted to, our stars, you know, the French exodus of so many, like Paul Robeson, James Baldwin, Josephine Baker, among so many others, who, you know, kind of went to France and Paris and were embraced in a way that they weren't here. There's so many different aspects. I mean, it's 11 different scenes, and each one takes a look at something different.
Now, Matthew, how were you attracted to this production, and what role or roles do you play?
So as a member of the NOLA Project, I was definitely part of the discussion and decision-making process when it came to deciding what the season was going to be for our 19th season. This is our 19th season as a company. And, you know, it's very collaborative. You know, everyone's input is important. And this play, when we were looking at this work, which has meant so much, I mean, this is required reading for a lot of folks that study theater. You know, it's part, undeniably part of the African-American theater canon, and I would argue part of the American theater, greater American theater canon, and to find out that it had not been ever produced regionally was kind of shocking. So in many ways, it feels like, you know, it's been overdue that this play has been presented in this area. So that's one of the things that definitely attracted me to it. In terms of the roles that I play, you know, we all play multiple roles. So it's exciting. You're going to see some of your, if you are a fan of local performers, some very familiar faces in the, you know, theater, comedy, music scene are a part of this production. You're going to see the different facets of those performers. And, you know, in terms of the roles that I play, I play in one vignette that is kind of an homage to those folks that I mentioned earlier who had kind of expatriated to France because of the welcome that they did not feel in their home country, which is the United States. And then I play, you know, a character from a kind of grungy black gay bar in Harlem as well, you know, in the contemporary 80s or any time, really. But it, since it was written in the 80s, it definitely has a bit of that feel to it.
Will it be an emotional journey? Will we experience joy, discomfort, humor?
Ideally, if we're doing our jobs correctly, you know, George C. Wolfe has set us up to experience all three of those things. There is absolute joy in this production, as there is absolute joy in the African-American experience. There is also discomfort and deep pain that is referenced. I don't know that you can do the African-American experience justice and leave that part of our experience out. You know, there is immense humor. I mean, we're a funny people, right? So I do hope that folks will laugh and feel comfortable laughing. But yeah, some of it's going to be uncomfortable. And I think that's appropriate.
We're moving around a bit. We're not seated and looking at an hour-long performance. How does that work?
There are portions of the production that are outdoors. In fact, the production does begin outdoors. So you will move through NOAM's campus as these different vignettes are set up. There is a portion where folks will get a chance to sit down for a minute. So it's not that they're going to be on their feet there the entire time necessarily. but yes, you will be physically moving through this production, much in the same way that you would move through real museum exhibits if you were to visit NOAM's campus or any other museums. So in that way, it is very immersive. That third wall is broken early and often. There's kind of a conversation between the performers and the audience that's happening at all times.
What might audiences carry away from the production? Do you think this work has the power to affect social change?
Wow, that's a tough question. Insofar as any work can, I hope that it does. I think that it certainly has the power to raise questions and inspire discussions, which is where I think, you know, a lot of real societal change happens, right? When we start having sometimes maybe uncomfortable discussions about certain experiences that different parts of the population or different parts of our citizenry have to endure or have had to endure. I think that it asks questions about the legacy of African-Americans. And I think that I do believe that the play ends on, you know, kind of a hopeful note, that, you know, it isn't all doom and gloom, that, you know, we're a people of immense talent, immense joy, immense contribution to this country. And I hope that folks walk away with a celebration of that, whatever that means to them.
NOLA Project cast member Matthew Thompson, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
It's been a pleasure talking with you as well, Diane. Thank you very much for having us.
The NOLA Project and the New Orleans African American Museum present The Colored Museum by George C. Wolfe. Performances run through March 9th. Visit NOLAproject.com for more info. From WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge, you've been listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Diane Mack. Thanks to our guest, Heather Guidry, Baton Rouge Community College's Dean of Technical Studies and Adult Education. Bobby Hortzberg, captain of the crew of Ferret. And from the NOLA Project, cast member Matthew Thompson. Our managing producer is Alana Schreiber. Today's episode was produced by Matt Bloom and Audrey Procell, and it was engineered by Garrett Pittman. You can listen to Louisiana Considered Monday through Friday at noon and 7 p.m. It's available on Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you get your podcast.
Major support for Louisiana Considered provided by Rouse's Markets, a Louisiana shopping experience, with additional support from Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation.